Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I was just playing around. I have like a, because I don't have AC in my place. I know you guys are tired of hearing that, but I have like a little one that was nearby. And I was asking Miriam before we came on, like, can you hear it? She's like, yeah. It's like,
I can.
Damn the devil, I got to turn it off. So how are you, my friend?
I'm hanging in there. I mean, we're at the last of the summer vacation we're in. We made the bold decision to not have camp or anything for my kids to do. And we forgot that it wasn't 1983. So I can't kick them out of my house. Well, because in 1983, you could like go outside and like, I'll see you for dinner. But it's 2024. Yeah. So I'm like, stop screaming at each other. Mommy loves you.
Were parents then? I mean, because there's just as many predators as there were. I think people just didn't know that there were that many predators.
They didn't care.
And I also think that predators were not as bold as they are now. Like,
I think the reality is that it is actually safer now than it was when we were kids. But
I think the predators are online now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're not like driving around in white vans, even though I still don't trust a white van.
Never. Never.
You know.
But like, so I think that like maybe we're more cautious and that's why less children are abducted. But like, I don't know.
I think it could be that they don't, you don't have the setup, right? Like, you guys have a yard, but I think kids don't play outside like that collectively anymore. So I think part
you
of
know
it
what?
Is that.
That's the truth. Like, honestly, if there were like a bunch of kids that were like at the park every day and they were like, can we just go to the park with all of our friends? I'd be like, yeah, that's fine. I would give them a phone and they would have to contact me every 12 seconds, but I would allow it. But that's not the case. So they don't, you know, so that I'm like, I don't know, go outside in our backyard that I paid a lot of money for. It's a very expensive backyard. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, and I also think kids are like, I mean, your kids are still pretty young. So they're still at that age where they want to go outside and play.
Right,
whereas I think when they get about, what, 12, they're like, they want to be on video games inside the house. So, but kids be, I still think 5 and 6 year olds be playing hard. Like, they'd be like, playing is like business. Like, that's a job.
Well, those years we went to camp every second we were home.
Yeah.
We just went to camp. We went the cheapest camp because I need all 9 weeks because I cannot. Nope. Mm-mm. But now we're like, oh, they could just sleep in and chill. And I'm like, I don't know that anyone is chilling. If you know what I'm saying. Like, are we chilling? No.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, at that age, kids want to be outside every single day. They want to be in the pool every single minute.
Now, I will say I am a child and I love to be in the pool all the time, to the degree where whilst they've been home, I'm like, let's go to the pool. Mommy's done working. And they're like, eh. I'm like, oh, no, no. You're already like super privileged children. Get your ass in the pool you are lucky to have. And it's a community pool.
Yeah,
but come
on,
how many people don't have access to a community pool?
A lot of people.
A lot of people. Okay.
So I'm definitely your bougie black friend because I don't really want to, even though when I was a kid, I played hard. I was a total tomboy. I'm like, I want to be outside, climbing trees, riding dirt bikes. Like, I'm all into it. But now I'm like, I just want to lay, and I'm not a drinker.
Oh my God.
Like, I just want to lay, maybe have something cold to drink, maybe some lemonade, and like,
girl,
sit by in the vicinity of a pool. Like, I just, and again, we talked about this, like a saltwater pool, but I like to just sit out and be outside and have people bring me food and like, yeah, I've turned into like, I'm getting rich auntie vibes, even though I'm not a rich auntie, but I'm totally like rich auntie vibes.
You really like, see, I'm like in the pool swimming and wrestling with children, my children, no one else's children. Yeah. Sometimes other people's children jump on me, but I'm like, no, I'm not responsible for you.
Oh,
they're cute,
you're
though.
The fun
but like,
one.
Yeah, I am the fun one, but I do make other children be like, can you grab me a cookie? So I do want someone to bring me food, but I'm the asshole who's eating in the pool. That's me.
Maybe I'm bitter because, you know, I learned how to swim as an adult. I took swimming classes. And like my brother tried to drown me when I was a kid. It's a whole thing.
Oh,
and so I had trauma, even though everybody in my family can swim like really, 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 really well. So the whole thing about black people can't swim. No, my family. I'm the only one. I'm the only asshole in the family who, whilst being a kid with a community pool in the apartment complex, my brother tried to drown me because he thought it would be funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I was traumatized about this. So anyway, as an adult, I got swimming lessons two summers I did it.
That's smart.
And me and another guy, another adult, were in the pool with little kids, and they were so cute. I was like, how? And they were like, no. They were like, Miss Lady, please hold your breath like this.
Oh,
and do like
God.
This underwater. And I was like, they were so cute. And I was like, this little kid, listen here, kid. They were not wrong. They were out swimming me.
Yeah.
But
they're
I did learn
to
how to swim.
Yeah.
So I'm not terrified of the pool anymore. I can actually hold my own. But I still need to be in the pool with you is what I'm saying to practice.
You need to come over to my house and go swimming with me.
I need to get in the pool
immediately.
Because I still haven't mastered treading water, and that is a mystery to me. Like,
oh, I'll teach you. And so will my children.
Yeah. And so these little kids are like, no, see, like this. I'm like, that's because you got little bitty bodies and little legs. Like,
Lavetta, so kids love nothing more than telling you what to do.
It's true.
I speak from so much experience. All they want to do is tell you what to do. Mm-hmm.
Like, damn kids. But I like children, but I also like them to wait on me. So anyway, I guess we should get started.
We should probably get started.
This week, I am first, and
all
I have a fun one, I think. I mean, I'm still getting over my cold, so hold on, bear with me.
You sound much better. I'm very happy to hear it.
And I'm at that point in the cold where you're like, I'm fine. And then, like, you do too much.
Yes.
And you're like, no, you still got a little bit to go. So, okay. So, my notorious woman this week is Marie Laveau.
Okay, and that's very familiar. But
yeah,
I don't know why.
It's going to be fun.
Okay.
So now Marie Laveau, a.k.a. the Voodoo Queen of New Orleans.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, go on.
Okay. Now, I'm just going to say it up front. There's a lot of like misinformation, not only because she was a black woman during this time, but also because voodoo and like voodoo is a religion, it's considered an actual religion, despite what people say, but it also has its own, it comes, along with voodoo comes its own sort of set of like misinformation, but also misunderstanding, you know.
Okay.
And, you know, with Latin cultures, Santeria is a form of, it's similar to voodoo and that kind of thing, but like, you know, it's so funny because when you think about even Christianity, you're like, especially Catholicism, you're like, it seems kind of voodoo-ish too. Because there's these gods, these little statues you guys pray to. Just so.
Well, they don't pray to it. I have Catholic in-laws.
I mean, do they not? But it's above and it seems like they're praying to it.
Right. But it's not praying to it. It's like homage of it. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm Jewish. I'm trying.
I mean, and Protestants, and this is why Protestants broke off from Catholicism, because they were like, you guys worship idol gods, but I'm a heathen. I'm not getting into this.
Here's what I know. Growing up in a very, very sort of evangelical Christian world as the Jew, all I know is that the other kids said, well, at least you're not Catholic. They pray to idols. And I remember being like, ooh, that does not sit well with me. And I don't know why, because I actually didn't know any Catholics, but I didn't.
Yeah, and I think that's misrepresentation of Catholicism. Yeah. It's all PR. It's all PR people. And just know that when people say that, Protestants say that. And then even with the Protestants, the Baptists and the Methodists didn't get along. It's all bullshit. Mm. So, but what I say all of that to say is that voodoo, I am very ignorant of what voodoo is. But from my understanding, different forms of Christianity are also, you know, that's what I'm saying. So.
I hear you.
Yeah. So I just want you to say that preemptively, that to take it with a grain of salt, some of this stuff that's reported about Marie Laveau. So let's get into it.
Okay.
So like I said, there's a lot of hearsay and misinformation around her life, including her parentage and her childhood. But it is believed that Marie Laveau was born Marie Catherine Laveau in September of 1801 in the French Quarter of New Orleans to Marguerite de Darcantel. Okay. Mm. My French is terrible. Mm-hmm. A freed woman. And Charles Laveau, a mixed race illegitimate son of a man by the name of Charles Laveau Trudeau, a white surveyor who became the mayor of New Orleans. So basically, Marie Laveau is believed to be the granddaughter of a former mayor of New Orleans.
Okay.
Now, during this time, just for context, white Frenchmen would often have a black family and a white family that they would take care of.
Wait, like two whole ass different families?
Yeah, two whole ass different families.
That's like a good job. That's a very good job.
It's good to be a white rich man back then, always. And it's good to be a white rich man now.
Right? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So often he would have and that's what the quadroon balls and all of that other stuff. It was designed to find these light skinned black women to be matched up with a white man who would take care of them and their offspring. But this man had a whole other white family that he was legally married to because interracial marriages were illegal. So
wait a minute. That doesn't sound terrible to me. I'm just saying.
No, it was a way for these women to, you know, like all things when you're dealing with men that you only meet briefly and then marry and then couple with. You may look out and he may be a decent man and within the confines of that treats you with some level of respect, even though you can never be married to him, but does his duty and actually takes care of you. And your offspring, right? Or he could be a terrible human being and beat you and disrespects you, along with his white family as well.
Right.
And just be a horrible human being. But it all depended on the luck of the draw, really.
Yeah.
And the man, which is what they seem to be trying to get women back to at the mercy of today.
Yep.
So basically, her father was a mixed race man. Probably, because a lot of information around black people and mixed race people was not accurate.
Right.
So, but that is my, I suspect that basically her father was part of Charles Laveau Trudeau's black mixed race family. It could be that.
Okay.
Or it could be a one night stand. Who knows? But basically both of her parents were free people of color. Probably mixed race people.
Okay.
So she would be what we would jokingly call a quadroon. Even though technically that's not real, but because both her parents are mixed race.
Right.
She is, you know, so and that's where the term mulatto comes from because a mule can't reproduce itself. So it's like, but she probably was a lighter skinned woman. Who knows?
It's all shit. It's all made up. It's all made up.
Yeah, because race is made up. So, but because both her parents were free people of color with some means, she had a different experience than, let's say, an enslaved person who could also be a mixed race person, but an enslaved black person or mixed race person in this area. I will say free people of color had their own set of stresses because you were always in danger if you left the multiculturalism of this area to be falsely enslaved
easily
and shipped away. So that was, so even though they weren't enslaved, they still didn't have, I wouldn't say their lives were easier and they can go and come as they please, but there were still some restrictions on them going and coming as they please because they were people of color. So, so it's a lot more nuanced. But I say all that to say is that she had some freedom, but she did not have a cakewalk. I should say that.
There you go.
Now, her grandmother was born into slavery, but her grandmother, and that's another thing with slaves, even in this area, slaves in this area were had different privileges than slaves in like other parts of the United States. And also because New Orleans didn't become technically a part of the United States until later. But but slaves in this area could often work on their own time to save up money and were often bought their own freedom.
That's really cool.
Which, again, which was not...
You really couldn't do that anywhere else, right?
You really couldn't do that. And that is also why New Orleans is very special in, in that sense. So now, again, her grandmother was born into slavery but bought her own freedom and would go on to purchase some land where she built a home, basically a Creole cottage is what they called it, in 1789. So records show that her grandmother bought land in 1789.
That's in the French Quarter. Okay. Yeah.
So this is where probably where Marie was born.
Okay.
And again, Marie, like her mother and her father, was of African, Native American, and French descent, and probably a little Spanish thrown in there. So mixed race people. Now, she was also, because of New Orleans, was basically colonized by the French, and then the French again, and then before it became part of the United States. So she was a Catholic. So she attended mass nearly every day as a child, along with her family.
Every day.
And again, every day. That's in the Catholics. Yeah. So
commitment.
Now, and she also reportedly spoke because of this multiculturalism, French, Spanish, and English, and various forms of patois in the area.
Okay.
So there's Creole, which Haitian people speak. Like that's what Haitian people speak, which is, also a form of patois, French, English, and some African dialects in Haiti.
Okay.
But so that's why sometimes when Haitian people come here, they're like Creoles because they're thinking of the language. But that Creoles are people in the Louisiana area, which is different than Creole that Haitian people speak even today. So
I'm learning something right now.
Yes. So... now, again, there was a long history of enslaved people, free people, and white people, and indentured servants mingling in this area, which is, again, I tell people a lot of times, New Orleans is so foreign to even Americans, like it's so exotic even to us when we go there because it's so different than the rest of America. But to be clear, the racial hierarchy was still in effect in the area with rich white land-owning men at the top of the food chain. So,
unsurprised face is here. Okay, go on.
but many black people and mixed race people and Creoles and different people, but there are a lot of successful black people in the area, successful business, black people in business, landowners in this area.
Great.
Good. And that's why, so much so that white people who would come into the area from other parts of America would be very uncomfortable because they were used to black people behaving in different. Yeah. So
excellent.
Now it's believed growing up, she learned how to become a hairdresser in her grandmother's home. She also learned the skills of becoming an herbalist and a midwife.
Oh.
So the thinking was, again, these are free people of color. So if you're enslaved, you have a job. You're not paid for it unless you're able to work using your skills to work for other things to actually make money to buy your freedom or to buy the freedom of your family members. So but as a free person of color, they're not hiring. There's no jobs. So you have to figure out you have to become an entrepreneur.
Right.
Right.
You make your own jobs. Yep.
Yeah. And you're probably not socially well connected enough to marry, quote unquote, well. Because so these mixed race and black women are at a they have some advantages. But then it's like, well, they're not going to survive in society through marriage necessarily.
Right.
Also,
right.
You know, because it's not about marrying well for them. It's about probably. But they also have the freedom of probably have a love match versus a financial match.
Right. That's nice.
So that's why getting her trained in herbalism, midwifery, and hairdressing. so she would be able to take care of herself. It's also here that it's believed that perhaps here's where she also learned a little bit of voodoo practices. And again, they're also staunch Catholic. So like many people in this area, the practices and rituals of voodoo was combined with the practices and rituals of Catholicism. That, again, is a very specific to this area. Now, when she was about 18, so on August 4th, 1819, Marie married a man by the name of Jacques Paris, a carpenter and free man of color from Haiti.
Okay.
He probably perhaps came to the area after the War of Independence. Haiti is the first Black nation to fight for their independence and win and be successful against the French.
Yeah.
So a lot of Black people also and a lot of mixed race people left Haiti, fled from Haiti. It's the Black people in Haiti were pissed and they couldn't go to France like the white people. Because of racism. Yep. So a lot of them went to Louisiana and New Orleans in particular. Now, she and Jacques Paris married at the St. Louis Cathedral. Okay. And they were married by Father Antonio de Sedalia, also known as Father Paris Antoine. According to baptismal records, the couple would ultimately have two children, two daughters, Felicity and Marie. Born in 1823 and 1824, but it is also believed that both girls died in childhood.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. So after the death of the children, Jacques himself disappeared. But again, it's hard because these are Black people. So oftentimes people would die and they wouldn't report it. Necessarily, unless it was in a police report. Yeah. So a lot of the tracking that you do for Black people and people of color in this time period was through baptismal records or any church records.
Right.
Like marriage. Right. And yeah. So people think he may have died around 1825. But so whatever happened, and they're not really sure how, whatever happened, Marie began referring to herself in 1825 as the Widow Paris.
Okay.
A moniker that she would move forward with. So, and oh my gosh, she'd still be in her like 20s.
Yeah.
Like her mid-20s. I mean,
like if the math sounds right, she's lived several lives at this point.
Yeah. She's lost two children and a husband.
God, I can't.
Now, in 1826, she fell in love or at least started hanging out with.
They're talking.
a white man by the name of Christophe de Glapion, a noble Frenchman with whom she lived with until his death in 1855.
Okay.
So he was from a wealthy, prominent family. And again, interracial relationships were forbidden. But baptismal records do show that she and Louis had about seven children.
What?
Some people say they had 15, but a lot of people think that they might be conflating the children with the grandchildren.
Yeah. That's a lot.
But of the seven children that she and Christophe had, only two survived.
My God, did nobody study medicine? No, because
And also she's Black. Like, it's not like they can go to the hospital and like,
You're right. You're right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, the priest that married her, priest Perron Antoine, apparently he had come to the area early on, like maybe 30 years or 40 years earlier to try and like institute the Spanish Inquisition practices in the area.
Oh,
and people were like, nah, playa. So he left and then came back. And when he came back, he basically stopped trying to do all of that and just kind of settled into like, but his big thing is that he was about helping the poor. You know, helping, giving solace to the local area.
He wanted to start the Spanish Inquisition, changed his mind and started helping the poor.
I think what happened is that he was sent there from Spain.
Because
remember, this used to be a Spanish colony and then it became a French. Yeah. So it goes back and forth between the French and the Spanish. And it's like, that ain't gonna work, player. Who knows? Maybe he was just like, yeah, this kind of sucks. Because the Inquisition
is the opposite of helping the poor. Just to be clear, it's murdering the poor. Okay.
They tried to bring it to New Orleans and the citizens are like, nah, play it. That's not going to work here. So they basically ran him out of town.
That's good. Goodbye.
So when he came back, now he died around 1829 at the age of like 81. So he died, you know, a few years after she, Marie and Christophe coupled off. So, but from him, she, from the beginning, she always had a big heart and she wanted to help the people in the area. So that is very clear. So even though there's a lot of mystery around exactly what she did, you know, and the folklore, what is clear is that Marie Laveau always wanted to help those less fortunate and particular black people and other mixed race people in the area.
That's great.
So now she, like many New Orleans, many citizens in the city, went to, like I said, Catholic Mass in the mornings on Sunday. She went every day to Catholic Mass. And then on Sunday she went, and then she would go off to a place called Congo Square in the evenings on Sundays, where mostly enslaved black people and free black people would gather to dance and perform ceremonies.
Oh, that's cool.
So the thing I could think of is, like, the best way I can describe this is, like, you know, the drum comes from Africa. So it's just like they get together and they dance.
Yeah.
So to the white people, it's like, ooh, what is this mysterious, like, thing? And then they're probably just getting together and dancing and laughing, and they get to blow off some steam because these white people are stressing them out all week.
All day.
And she would also perform, again, voodoo. We call it voodoo seems mysterious now, but at the time, all kinds of things were accepted.
Okay.
At this time. Go figure. There was more acceptance then.
Weird.
So she would gather and dance and perform miracle, you know, rituals along with other voodoo practitioners as well.
All right.
Including a man by the name of Dr. John, who was a well-known voodoo priest.
Okay.
And some people say that at her time in Congo Square, she took what she learned from her mother and her grandmother, but also learn more from more experienced practitioners such as Dr. John.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds right.
She also, so she would, again, she's an herbalist, a midwife, a hairdresser, and mama trying to make money.
Yes.
And in her role as a voodoo a practitioner, she also would sell what we would call, they call them gri-gri bags. Basically, they're charms.
I've heard
and
of this.
It could be, it could be made of all kinds of things. Think of a rabbit's foot in a bag along with your grandmother's
crystals.
Tooth, like crystals, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And it would be put in a bag and then they would pray over it, and you would either wear it around your neck or you would put it above your door at your home. And what's the thing that Jewish people have? It's like
a
from
mezuzah.
The... mezuzah.
Yeah.
So think of it like that. It's like a charm. People would come to voodoo priests for, usually they were having a problem and they're like, I need prayer. I need a charm. I need my bad luck to turn around. And this is, we're all familiar with this kind of thing nowadays.
I mean, honestly, in the wellness industry now, not even the wellness industry, just the like holistic, like,
exactly.
I'm gonna be for real. Me and my two children will go into a crystal store because first of all, you can buy like a crystal for $2. So I'm like, getting them something special, and I'm giving them like a total of $6, including tax. That sounds like a good day. But it's like we look for the ones that like, oh, this stone is good for anxiety, and you guys are nervous about.
Exactly.
It's that same idea.
It's the same idea, which, excuse me, is not foreign to us, but to them and to the, AKA the white people, it'd be like, oh, what is this African Negro nonsense? What is going on?
Let's be real. They were like, what's this devil worship happening?
Yeah.
And how do we burn them? I mean, come on. Yeah. White people are terrible.
It's side-eyeing, but it was still more accepted than it later became. It was still, it was more accepted. And they would also partake of this. Now I'm getting to that.
Yeah.
So themselves. So, and again, this is New Orleans. So the food, you know, the food was, because the food today, it's just, woof. If you're outside the United States and you want to eat good, I mean, and I'm a Southerner, and soul food from the South is delicious, but even I am impressed with the food in New Orleans. You go there and you're like, oh my God. And it's cheap too. So
what? You know, I've never been, right?
Oh, you,
I really want to go. I know.
When we have a live performance in New Orleans,
yes,
we're gonna get there 1 week ahead, and we're just gonna eat our way through the city, and we're gonna show up 15 pounds heavier
that
because the food is so good. So good. Now again, there's other practitioners, voodoo practitioners, that are known. Dr. John is a very, very popular one, but her reputation as a voodoo practitioner and then eventually being called the voodoo queen of New Orleans became cemented in the 1830s after a very wealthy man, white man, whose son was on trial for murder, was told by his lawyers that there was no hope of saving their son. Like the case was too strong against them. So he came to Marie and offered to buy her a home if she could get his son off.
Wow.
So reportedly, she spent weeks praying at the cathedral and conducting self-flagellation rituals. So instance, she would buy these really hot peppers. She would hold them in her mouth.
Oof.
And be praying and you know, silently praying, and for hours. This is what it was reported, right?
Okay.
She did this for weeks leading up to the trial and sentencing. On the day of the sentencing, she placed the peppers that she had been praying with for weeks on end under the judge's chair. So when the judge came to court, mysteriously, he freed the man's son.
What? Oh my God.
So people are like, oh my God, it worked. Whatever her spell was, worked. There's some people think now, historians are like, no, because remember, Marie Laveau was also a hairdresser. She had a business. She knew a lot of people. She's very charismatic. A lot of people feel like that what people thought as her voodoo spells was just her getting the right information and giving it to the right person. Or using information to get people to do the things that she wanted them to
do. Mean,
or even trading her information for favors for these people.
Listen, it's a skill, okay?
I mean, it is a form of voodoo of something, of some curses, because, well, whatever happened, the judge let the young man off. It could be that Marie traded favors with the judge. And I don't mean of a sexual nature, because apparently she was very well connected to the elite of New Orleans, as well as being very, very well connected to enslaved people and working class people. She was very well connected. But whatever happened, the young man got off.
Okay. Well,
so from that point on,
I hope he didn't do it. I hope he got off because he was innocent, you know. Yeah.
But from that point on, it cemented her powers. People were like, oh, she's the real deal. They don't know how she did it.
Okay.
And from that point on, not only socially, but also politically, she started to gain some political clout.
Okay.
And people started to take, and these circles started to take her more seriously. So she used her powers for good by all accounts because of this. So she would attend prisoners who were sentenced to death. She would pray with them. She would pray over them. She would even cook their meals. There were some rumors that in her conference with them, some of the prisoners would receive poisons from her before they went to the gallows, maybe some drugs to help, whatever it is. Because again, she's an herbalist. She's a midwife. So she understands herbs and potions and that kind of thing. She would basically be called a nurse practitioner today.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say, I feel like there are people who could do this kind of.
Yeah.
But also, I'm good. If you're sentenced to death and like you did it, I don't really care if the way you die is gentle.
Yeah.
I honestly like to preserve my own humanity, I'm going to say that I hope the way you die is gentle.
And also, unless remember,
you're Marianne
this is
Cotton,
a time,
then
well, yeah,
I'm going to rephrase, right?
But even with her, remember, hangings, executions were like well attended. They were like, people came to see. They're like, oh, the neck didn't break. Oh, the neck broke. Oh, yeah. Like people were, so I would imagine if you're like, yeah, all the praying and the voodoo curses didn't work. I did that shit. So like, can you give me something so I'm not conscious when it happens, basically?
Yeah, I'm okay with that, you know? Yeah. Because when you're like the star of the local show, by that I mean gonna die today, then like, yeah, you probably don't want to be super cognizant, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I think the thinking is that she did this out of compassion.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
for
cool.
them. You know, again, this was all, and this is all, I think Marie understood that, especially at this time, even today, white people really don't want to know black people, but they will believe some of the most ridiculous things. So if you can use, if you can like craft your own PR to get the things that you need in life, this is what I think she was doing. She was like a masterful publicist, her own masterful publicist.
I think you're, yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. Many years later, her after her death, her daughter Philomene confirmed in an interview with a reporter with the Bikyune newspaper that Marie would only engage in Catholic traditions during these visits, and that her mother would actually prepare the men's last meal and pray with them.
That's, I mean, she sounds like the kindest hearted.
Yeah.
She sounds like what we envisioned Mother Teresa was.
Yes.
Perhaps yes. Mother Teresa wasn't that, though. You guys can go find that episode.
Yeah.
I think season one.
Yeah.
Season two. I don't remember. Look it up.
But, and again, I feel like her folklore is a battle of like what white people were reporting and the truth, and then what she was also feeding into to obscure exactly what she was doing so she could move freely
exactly.
and have social power. So now, like I said, it's believed because she was a free woman of color, she has certain privileges that other maybe black people or enslaved people did not. But again, there was always that threat of bondage. Mm-hmm. And it also meant that this class of people had to really figure out a way to make money. You know, through being an expert, a midwife and what have you. So it is also reported that she became very wealthy through her contacts with the elite. So initially her hairdressing business started out with like just the local people. And then because her reputation and possibly her association with Christophe, a white man well connected, then she was able to get into the homes of wealthy white women in the area. And then that, you know, that, but she used those connections to continue to help people like her. But she also made a lot of money. So she was making, she had several streams of income, hairdressing business. Because after a while, she's not just doing it herself, she's hiring other hairdressers, Yeah, she's doing that. She's selling her charms. She's also charging for her services as a midwife, as an herbalist, but also as a voodoo priest, a queen. And apparently she bought several homes, you know?
Really?
So she had property. Again, it's all kind of obscure because then it's like, is she doing it through Christophe? Like, did he buy property? And is the property that he bought is really her property? Who knows? I understand why she tried to kind of obscure some of her comings and goings, because again, and then even though the white people in this area are a lot more accepting of black people and they're used to free people of color being about, there's always that prejudice. So, you know, she really, after the 1830s with, you know, this trial and cementing her as, you know, the queen, the voodoo queen, you kind of lose track of her in the newspaper. But in the 1850s, it comes out again because the authorities were cracking down. Race relations were getting tense because we're leading up to the Civil War and that's bleeding into this area. They like basically came and they were cracking down on what they considered basically the Negro stuff, right? So the voodoo, and they came in and they took one of her her statues.
Oh,
so
why?
Who knows? Because maybe they were harassing her, and she was saying that they were basically harassing her.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Harassing her and other the black women, and you know, and also they probably were upset that she, anytime, particularly a black woman or a woman of color was getting in trouble, she would come to their aid. So she was always helping out black people and white people alike, but they didn't like the fact that she was also helping these people. Mm. But they were also afraid of her because they thought of her power. So there's a little bit of fear and disdain and racism, right?
Yeah.
And the basically, she was in good with the elites of New Orleans, who were also protecting her, and was like, leave her alone. And I would imagine that that didn't sit too well with the local authorities. Mm. But there was in... but just to know how powerful she was actually one of the few Black people who were covered in the newspaper. Because in 1869, a newspaper article called her the reigning voodoo queen. So at this point, she had surpassed Dr. John and other local voodoo practitioners who were also famous. And they said that she had been the voodoo queen for a quarter of a century. So for 25 years at that point.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but again, it's like, how much of it is like performative, just herbal, you know, her skills as an herbalist and a midwife, and people's belief. Okay. I mean,
honestly, she can hide behind that, and it's brilliant. Yeah. That is exact. Like, she's genius.
And to top it off, she would often walk around the city with a snake, her pet snake, around her.
Yes, she would. That's right. That's how you do it.
So, and she would, at some point in the United States, it's so funny, we have to have the Crown Act now. At some point in the United States, and in New Orleans in particular, they outlawed Black women and women of color from walking around with their hair out.
Okay.
So, what the Black women did was, they got around that by wearing these really beautiful, colorful, intricate, like, head wrappings that were, you know, a throwback to Mama Africa.
Yeah.
And so it's like they became even more beautiful.
Yeah.
Enrico, like, now from
you're
that,
like,
right?
Now you're like more jealous of me. Okay.
Yeah. Like... But she reportedly, she played into this persona that she had well crafted, because it's also protection for her and the people that she was protecting. Like, yeah. I said, she would walk. She would dance publicly at Congo Square. Okay. She would perform. They say she would perform rituals there in public. She would walk around with her pet snake. They also said she performed exorcisms.
Get it? Sure.
Catholics believe in that.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah. Why not?
And. Also, it is reported that often people who offended her would usually meet with a terrible fate.
Hmm. Well, you know how it is.
So all of this is coming together to create this image of a voodoo queen. And like, you know, again, I feel like today, now we know better. Back then, it was just, you know, and I also think a lot of the practitioners who were usually Black were playing it up to protect themselves and to scare the white people.
I could do a spell when you leave, sir.
So, you know, outwardly, she's walking around with a snake. She's these beautiful, colorful head wrappings. She's, you know, selling her amulets. She's probably playing it up, right?
Oh, yeah.
And she's also helping women, children, convicts attending mass. Again, she was always known as a very devout Catholic. And she basically, her reputation for probably from 1830s on was very, very positive with the people who lived in regular people and even like well-heeled people in the community.
Okay.
But to certain, like to the newspapers, to the white establishment, they were annoyed by her regard in the community.
Right.
And they were afraid of her. So,
which is good. I like that a lot.
Now she was also, she was, like I said, the voodoo queen of New Orleans, but she also, the voodoo practitioners were considered like real leaders and prominent people. So she actually became the third female leader of voodoo in New Orleans, and was the first Sanite Dede, which was the ruler over basically the area, because it was organized. And she had usurped a woman by the name of Marie Salope as the head voodoo queen or priestess.
Okay.
And she maintained her authority throughout her leadership over this group, even though there was a challenge in the 1850s. So this, like all things, things become political.
Always. Always.
Yeah. But she basically reigned over New Orleans voodoo during her time. So much so that after her death, the numbers of people who follow voodooism, like it it dropped off dramatically after her death. So she was a very charismatic leader.
Oh.
Very charismatic leader and figure. And even though one of her surviving children, she had a daughter that she also named Marie Laveau, and they think she named her Marie Laveau the second to continue on with the traditions.
Keep going, baby. Yeah.
Now, but again, things started to change in like 1855. Things became a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. Christophe died, and apparently he left her with a lot of debt. Also,
what a motherfucker, idiot, white man, Jesus Christ.
Because he's also from a well-off family. He wasn't raised to know how to do anything.
No.
You know?
No. He was
just
like,
with connections.
Mummy said I can spend as much money as I want to, so I'm going to keep doing that.
So, and she's
prick.
Just, yeah.
Sorry.
But... Yeah, I don't know that much about her. It sounds like that it was a love match. They were together because she didn't have to be with him. And she was making her own money. But he left her with a lot of debt. And with that also, they always had yellow fever outbreaks too, because just hygiene wasn't good. It's just hot, sweaty, just this conducive mosquitoes. It's just a lot going
on,
right?
Yeah.
But she always helped out. She provide money, food, also just services. She's a midwife. She's an herbalist. She's a practitioner, a medical practitioner as well. So she would always help out. But again, race relations was becoming very tense leading up to the Civil War, which was starting in the 1850s.
Yes.
And as such, leading up to the Civil War, they started passing a lot of laws targeting basically non-white population in New Orleans. You know, and then they outright prohibited voodoo ceremonies. So they couldn't go to Congo Square, and she couldn't do these. She couldn't be openly about it because they were cracking down on what they thought was what the Negroes were doing.
Yeah.
But she held on as best she could. She survived the war.
Oh, yeah.
And then her reputation was still cemented. But ultimately, she passed away on June 15th, 1881.
Ooh.
She's believed to have passed away at the age of 79 at her home.
Okay.
And by this time, she was known as Marie Catherine Laveau Paris Glapion. So she took on Christophe's last name.
Okay.
The different spellings of her surname result from many different women with the same name in New Orleans around that area.
Okay.
So that's why there's conflicting things about her actual death date, but most people put it at 1881 because on June 17, 1881, it was announced in the Daily Picayune that Marie Laveau, aka the Queen of Voodoo, had died peacefully in her home.
Okay.
Now, according to the Louisiana Writers Project, her funeral was lavish and attended by a diverse audience, including members of the white elite in the area.
Okay.
Of course, owing to her folklore and her persona, after her death, many reports circulated of people seeing her around town.
Okay.
Yep. News of her death also was featured in the Staunton Spectator in Virginia and the Omaha Daily Bee in Nebraska, as well as many newspapers in the Minnesota area.
Interesting. So word got around about her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thousands of people apparently in Minnesota took to the streets to pay homage to her.
I love that.
Yep. And at the time of her death as well, the New York Times and the New Orleans Daily Picayune and the Daily States all reported on her as, quote, a woman of great beauty, intellect, and charisma, who was also pious, charitable, and a skilled herbal healer, end quote.
I mean, I'm very proud of America for doing that. 'Cause
I know, it's so interesting, to know of her. And now she was buried, side note, she was buried at the St. Louis Cemetery, number one.
Okay.
Tours continue to visit and draw X's on her, in accordance with the decades-old tradition that if people wanted Marie Laveau's spirit to grant them a wish, they had to draw three X's on the tomb. Turn around three times, knock on the tomb, and yell out their wishes.
I would totally do that.
And if it was granted, they'd have to come back, circle their X, and leave her an offering.
I might not be able to do it then.
Yeah, I'm not. I kind of leave it alone.
I'm all leave it alone. Yep.
Yeah. Now, because dicks are going to be dicks and they always want to ruin a good time.
Yeah.
Vandalism became a problem on her grave as well. So as of 2015, there's no longer public access to her particular grave.
Wow.
You have to enter with a tour guide.
Yeah.
Just to make sure you're not vandalizing the place. And then this change was made by the Archdiocese of New Orleans to protect the tombs of her family as well.
Oh, really?
Okay. As many others that were interred there as well. Now,
you guys,
after
that's
her death,
why we can't have nice things. Okay?
We can't have nice things. Dicks ruin it for everybody. Yep.
Exactly. Jesus.
Now, after her death, I'm almost finished here. Respected writer Lafadio Heron and reporters from the Times praised her as a kind woman who helped the poor and sick. And also, despite never having been photographed or having sat for a painter, there are multiple 19th century paintings of an unidentified Creole woman purportedly to be of Marie Laveau.
Huh.
But this is not true.
Mm. Yeah.
By the 1940s, it was so common. It was common for many portraits of an unidentified, basically a light-skinned woman wearing a tignon, a head wrapping,
right,
to be identified as Marie Laveau. And then as of late, in 1915, a portrait of a Creole woman with a madras tignon, was said to have been painted by George Catlin, was purportedly of Marie Laveau. But again, that is not true. but that painting is in the collection of the Louisiana State Museum. And it is labeled as portrait of Marie Laveau, but it is not.
It has not
been proven to be her.
Okay.
And I would imagine as a voodoo practitioner, there is probably some sort of thing like, I don't want somebody to capture my image that's going on with her. So... Mm-hmm. But just so you know, if you want a picture of Marie Laveau, you can get a copy of that picture. But just know that that is not the real Marie Laveau.
Maybe we'll post it on our Instagram as not Marie Laveau.
Yeah.
Right?
But it's I mean, I guess it's nice that people still want to remember her. And it is the woman is beautiful. Whoever the woman who sat for that portrait is beautiful. Now, as you know, as you can imagine, her life has inspired many, 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 many stories, many stories on the stage, TV and film, usually with the focus on her being a voodoo queen in the dark arts.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, versus her being a philanthropic herbalist, widow, midwife and, you know, that kind of thing. But probably the most famous to date is the image of Angela Bassett, the great Angela Bassett, playing Marie Laveau in, is it the second or the third season, the Coven season of American Horror Story here in America, which is a lot of people's favorite season of American Horror Story.
You know, I don't watch that.
And in it, she's interacting with Daphne LaLaurie, this horrible woman that we'll probably cover her one day, played by the great Kathy Bates. And Marie Laveau puts a spell on her because LaLaurie is an evil, evil woman in real life and in the show. But there's no historical records to say that they ever interacted at all.
That's fine.
But... Angela Bassett, the great Angela Bassett, does a great job of playing this version of Marie Laveau as a voodoo queen.
That's awesome.
So if you, and also Coven is a wonderful season. They're taking a lot of license, like creative license. It's a horror show. So everybody, it's all fake. It's all phony.
Right.
It's all fiction. But... if you're going to have somebody play Marie Laveau, Angela Bassett is a perfect person to play Marie Laveau.
Angela Bassett is so good.
You have to say Angela Bassett. That's how you have to say Angela Bassett.
I just can hear you say her name all day. Okay.
Yeah. Now, when you go to New Orleans, when I was there, they actually have a Marie Laveau voodoo shop. And like, again, I believe in the power of the spirit, but I absolutely did not touch anything in there because I do not want to be in the Exorcist. Mm-mm. Exorcist 4. I don't want to be, I don't want to touch anything there.
Yeah. I don't like believing it, but then like, what if I'm wrong? You know what I'm saying?
Yes. But I also love that this black woman who by all accounts was a philanthropist who really just helped her own people. Over the course of her life, she did own about 7 slaves. But back then, black people often bought their family members or other people out of slavery. But that is in case that comes up. So it's always complicated when you see, well, they own slaves, when it's like, but when you look at it, it's like, oh, that they bought like their husband, their wife, their brother, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but by all accounts, she was a very kind-hearted woman and not the voodoo, dark, bitter black woman priestess that she's often portrayed as, unless again, she's being played by Angela Bassett. Okay. So with that said, that is Marie Laveau, AKA the Voodoo Queen of New Orleans, AKA midwife, herbalist, probably
hairdresser,
business owner, entrepreneur, and just all around actually wonderful woman who also was like, well, all these white people scared of me. What they gonna be scared of me?
Yes.
Because here's a snake around my neck, motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. So that is Marie Laveau. Yep.
So like a genius. A genius. A genius. She fully knew how to do it. She's amazing. She's fascinating.
I love it. She's just like, because again, she's got to carve out her life in this place where there's hostility all around her.
And
you know?
She did it. Like, what's fascinating to me is that she had a lot of barriers just because of the way you had to exist as a black woman in America in that time. So within those barriers, she took every advantage and was able to live her truth. You know, was able to help the people she wanted to help. And she just like put on a little show for the white people to be like, a little bit afraid, which, yes.
That's what I think. Even though I do think New Orleans is haunted. If you ever go there, you do feel it. But the food is so good, I don't mind.
That's fine. I'll do whatever for really good food. That's fine.
And apparently the spirits only bother motherfuckers they need to bother. So.
Oh, they don't need to bother us. We're very nice people.
Yes. So, and I will say that there is a side note. There is one video. It was people who were giving a walking tour and around her, you know, New Orleans, which I highly recommend doing a walking tour if you ever go there. But they were saying that there's also like some of the black people in New Orleans are like, well, her two daughters didn't die before, and there's offsprings of her too, but who knows, because again, they didn't trace black people the way that they should have.
Yeah,
so her two daughters may have from Jacques may have well survived, but it's hard to tell. So there's just a lot of, you know, stuff around her that I think that she contributed to, and then just, you know, because of the time it was and she was black. So
incredible. I've heard of her, but I don't think I understood what she did until right now. You know, it's awesome. Yeah, okay. We're going to go somewhere else.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Are you watching the Olympics?
I watch the highlights.
All right. So not everyone's going to obsess, but so I've been obsessively watching gymnastics my entire life. I know we've already talked about this. Also, I'm a coach, a gymnastics coach. From my comfortable couch whilst eating ice cream, I can tell them what to do. Very knowledgeable because I've watched so much. And I took it when I was a child for like a little bit. Okay, today we are going to talk about Rebecca Andrade. Who?
Okay.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
Girl, you are
it
not.
It sounds slightly. I'm not. I'm you just watching Kevin Hart and Kenan Thompson do the highlights, and I'm getting my life because they are hilarious.
I should watch that because I love them both.
Oh, yeah.
And my kids actually love both of them separately, very separate reasons. And they were just like, both of them together? But we're
it's
just
so
watching.
Funny.
We're watching like Gold. 3 hours. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Rebecca Andrade is a gymnast. And I'm just going to start out. She very famously won. Okay, if you haven't watched all the highlights yet and you've been living under a rock, maybe pause, watch the highlights, come back.
No, by the time this comes out, they will have seen this probably.
She famously beat Simone Biles on the floor.
Oh,
and she won
okay.
gold. And we'll talk about a little bit more. And okay, so I'm watching all of the gymnastics and I'm kind of obsessed. And this is like, I don't know how many hours I watched. 7? It's a lot. Calm down. Oh, stop judging. we're bonding. It's family bonding. Leave me alone. Yeah. There's two things they can't watch without me, and that is gymnastics and breakdancing. So, by the way, breakdancing. Oh, we just started watching it today. It's so good. Watching them give homage to the history of breakdancing, but also it's the Olympics. It's just, y'all gotta watch it. It's so good. It's so good.
I have to watch that then. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think it's pretty, like, they talk about the history, New York City in the eight, like, this is where it comes from, to like watch it.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good.
They're not pretending. There's no, you know, there's a black woman who is a breakdancer, and she's what's the word where they're talking about it?
Commentator.
She's a commentator. Okay. I'm like, yes, that's right. You got to go to the source, y'all.
That's right.
Okay. So let's talk about Rebecca Andrade. So watching the gymnastics, the many, many hours to watch, I was kind of obsessed with Jordan Chiles, Simone Biles, and Rebecca. They were all like supporting each other. And they're all like kind of neck and neck. And other gymnasts were too. It wasn't like, you could see that there was this, like, they like liked each other. I loved watching it. It's beautiful. There's so much respect for each other. So I was like, huh, who's this girl? And then my son and I were both like, oh, Rebecca's up. We just started to get like, everyone knew I was like obsessed with Simone. They're like, you're just here for Simone. I was like, shut up. But yes. So Rebecca Andrade was born on May 8th, 1999. She grew up in a favela, which I think is like a very tiny town, in the outskirts of Guarulhos. I said that wrong. Sao Paulo. So she's Brazilian. She's from Brazil.
Brazilian. Oh, okay. Now I know what you're talking about. Yes.
Okay. See, you pay a little attention. Yes.
Yes.
So it was an overcrowded, there were many overcrowded slums in that area, with houses that look like shacks near, and it was near Brazil's city centers. She is one of 8 children, and I don't know who her father is. Her mother is a single mother named Rosa, who's like badass. Okay, Rosa, I'm going to give you your due.
Oh,
damn,
yeah,
girl.
She'd have to be. Yeah.
Right? So Rebecca speaks Portuguese and English, and she's Afro-Brazilian. So just painting the picture, right? She says that her first experience with acrobatics is when she climbed and hung upside down on the bunk beds. Because 8 kids in a shack.
Yeah.
You got to bunk them. And she loved it. So she started gymnastics when she was 4. Her aunt worked at one of the gyms and took her with her to work one day. Now, so they do tryouts, from what I like. So the little kids try out to see if they have a general aptitude for it. And she like killed it. They said she was like strong, powerful, and also playful.
Imagine the little babies. I'd just be like, oh, look at the little arms and legs. So cute.
I would just be like, well, let's give them all a chance. But the gyms could not do that. But they were like, this girl, yes, girl.
Yeah.
Okay. So her mother cleaned houses for a living and then started walking to work to save money to pay for her gymnastics training. Now, for her to get to the gym, her and her brother would walk because they mostly couldn't afford the bus fare. It was a 2-hour walk each way, something like 3 to 4 miles up and down hills. And her brother talks about how, this is a quote from him, quote, when we would get there to the gym, I would collect cardboard, scrap metal and types of things, and I would sell it nearby and save up a coin here and there until I started building a bike in a junkyard. So on the days we didn't have money for bus tickets, which were 90% or more, we would ride the bike. So, and her brother, shout out to her brother. He's just taking her there and taking her home. He's just
want
like,
to say,
Yeah.
This is really inspiring and beautiful, but it's like, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, there's so much talent.
Yes.
And like, there's so much talent and intellect and like, just all the things we need to be successful on this planet, all over the world, and is probably hiding. Yes. She shouldn't have to do this. Like, she should be just going to school and then like, but the fact that she has to walk
to her gymnastics. Yeah.
And her mother, like her mother should just be able to have like, say her mother wants to go to work, but her mother shouldn't have to like, well, I have to give up taking the bus to work. Yeah. So I can save her. Like, this is the kind of stuff, like, she rose to the top, but how many other kids whose mother wasn't able to do that? Or brother was like, didn't love her and like, you know, didn't love her sister or had the ability. And I'm thinking like her brother just figured out how to build a fucking bike. Like, send this kid to MIT.
Like, for real. Like while we're like uplifting Rebecca, let's solve the world's problems with the whole family. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And these, like, I mean, this is all inspiring, but sometimes when I hear these stories, I'm like, this, it also enrages me that people have to be put through this bullshit when they have the natural talent. Like, let's put the energy, no matter where the kids are, they're in the West, they're in the East, they're in the South, wherever the kids are,
anywhere in the world,
no matter what they look like.
Yes. And,
but we know a part of this is because, you know, Brazil has mostly Brazil's population is Black and of African descent of slavery. Most people don't know that. They say like 20 million slaves went to South America and 2 million went to North America. So
let me act like I knew that. I didn't know that. I'm finding that out right now.
Majority of them went to.
No shit. Okay.
So, when I learned, because you're like Brazil, because the Brazil that they sell us is not the Brazil that's Black.
No. You're right.
But it is mostly Black. Just, I digress, but go ahead.
I just want to go to Rio and hang out on the beach.
I know. You definitely got to go to Brazil. Yeah.
Have you ever been?
No, everyone who's ever gone is like, oh my God, you'll love it. You know, obviously you have to consider safety.
Right.
You know, when you go to any place, but like, everyone's like, you definitely got to go to Brazil. So.
All right. So many places on my list. And speaking to what you just talked about, so I was thinking the same thing too. So there's an initiative that's funded by the city of, I cannot say this word, Guarulhos. Okay. It's called a sports initiative, which offers sports scholarships to kids of underserved backgrounds. So to be clear, they pulled up their bootstraps. They walked each way. They had a kind mother and a kind brother. They had all those in place, and they still needed that city-funded support. Could not be there without that money. So I'm so tired of bootstrap talking because, like,
I know
bootstraps need to be funded. And, you know, like, that's just reality.
Bootstraps need laces. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, and like, heels.
Need to have a bottom on the bottom of the boot, like, so they can use them. Like,
for real. So her coach, Monica Barroso dos Anjos, I said that. I'm sorry. I tried real hard. Hold them close. She trained for a year and a half with her and then was placed in the high-achieving group, which was the group of girls that participated in the competitions. So she wowed the judges in the 2009 Junior Pan American Games. She was about 10 years old. So then, I know, like a small child, 10 years old, she was invited to join the Parana Center. I'm trying to have an accent. Aren't I cute? For excellence in gymnastics to train professionally, which required her to move to the neighboring state of Parana without her family. 10 years old.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, she's had several interviews lately and they asked her, how did she feel, you know, about leaving your family at such a young age? And this is a quote from her. She says, "I saw it as a way to improve the lives of my entire family. So I did everything with a lot of love." 10 years old.
10 years old.
Understanding that she had that power it's a lot. That's a lot of pressure.
Imagine her mom having to let her go.
No, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Just 10 years old. Oof,
my baby. I know, right? So at, when she was 11, she received an offer to sign a contract with a junior gymnastics team at Flamengo. When I first read this, I was like, wait, I'm so stupid, you guys. I was like, she studied flamenco?
Miriam, you're not stupid. You're just American.
Yeah, I'm so American. That was the most American thing that I've thought of in days. Yeah.
Like, you and me both, sister. I'm right? guilty of it too. And I'll be like, oh yeah, I shouldn't say that out loud.
I'm so ignorant. Okay. So this was the best gymnastics team in the country. And that's where she's been training for the last 14 years. So she's still there. So her main idol in gymnastics, I'm going to talk about her main idol for a moment.
Okay.
And by the way, she did a lot, and I'm going to go through some of the things and some of the accolades, but like not all of them, just to be very, very clear. I'm going to kind of skim that. I want to talk about her more than like her list of medals, right?
Yeah.
So her main idol in gymnastics is a Brazilian gymnast named Diane Garcia dos Santos. When Rebecca first started in gymnastics, her immediate nickname was Little Diane. FYI. Okay, so Diane won the 2003 World Championship on the floor apparatus. And this was, so doing this, she became the first Black gymnast to ever win an event at the World Championships, as well as the first Brazilian and South American to win the competition. And then I read that and I was like, I should do her too. But I've never heard of her, but she's...
No,
she's,
and when did she win this?
In 2003.
In 2003, okay.
And then, you know, you like realize like the media and how things are done. Like, we should have all heard of her in 2003. Yep. She should have made all the headlines.
Yep.
No, she didn't.
We know why she did not, because she's Black.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
It was racism. That's what happened. Okay. I mean, the least we can do is call it out.
The very least.
Okay, so Rebecca made her international debut when she was 13 at the Junior Pan American Championships. She helped Brazil win the team silver medal behind Canada and ahead of Mexico. So individually, she won the gold medal in the all-around, on vault, and the floor, and she won the bronze on the balance beam. So she's 13, and she's just kind of taking it.
Wow.
So then at the Junior South American Championships, she placed first with the Brazilian team as well as in the individual all around. She competed also at the Brazil Trophy, which is the name of a competition, which was a domestic competition for juniors and seniors. And she edged out Olympians Jade Barbosa and Danielle Hipolita to claim the all around title. So like her stars are rising. In 2013, she competed in the Nadia Comaneci. Okay, I love Nadia Comaneci. Okay, sorry. Just a little moment.
You just like saying the name.
Uh-huh. Nadia Comaneci. I remember the little kids movie of Nadia when I was a child. They made like a TV movie. And the only thing I remember is that the little girl playing Nadia was like very good. And I remember being like, oh, she like a gymnast too. But there's a big table and the girls were like pausing for lunch and she sits down and all that's on the table are carrot sticks. And little Nadia's like, I'm hungry. And they're like, this is lunch. And like, and then we wondered why we discovered there was abuse in gymnastics. That's totally a side note. I'm totally going off topic. But remember the little girl like slowly eating a carrot. She's so hungry. All right, let's move on. So this is what I take in. Okay, so it's the Nadia Comaneci Invitational in Oklahoma City. She won the gold medal in the junior all around. In August, she competed at her second Junior South American Championship and the Brazilian team won the gold medal. Individually, she won the bronze medal in the all-around and also won a gold medal on the vault and uneven bars and the silver medal on the balance beam. Now, 2014 in February, she's nonstop. She's competing at the WOGA Classic in Plano, Texas. She won the gold in the all-around on vault and on even bar. She won the silver on the team with the team, so the whole team won it, on balance beam and the floor exercises. She's doing all this stuff. She's winning all these medals. Okay. Now, she was initially scheduled to represent Brazil in the 2014 Summer Youth Olympics in Nanjing, China, but she had to withdraw because she broke a toe. So she wasn't able to compete for the rest of the 2014 season.
Can you imagine breaking a toe? I don't know. Knock on wood. I don't want to imagine that.
I mean, if you think about it, she feels like her whole family is resting on her back.
Oh, yeah.
And then she breaks a toe. Because it's gymnastics.
You know, now you're saying all this. Do they get money with these medals? I know it's a stupid question, but it's one I feel like you have to ask. Like, is it like tennis where when you win, you don't just win, you win money?
I don't know. I think there is some sort of money, but okay. I don't think it is good money. I don't think it's good money till you're in your seniors.
Yeah. Oh, because that's right. This is junior. Yeah. And then when you do win the money, do you split it with the facility that you stayed with? Or like, is it that thing where like, yeah, you get money, but then does the money, is it the endorsements that's the thing that a lot of athletes need?
Almost always the endorsements from what I've gathered. I don't think she's slowly getting more and more money. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. Because I know people are like, it's crass to talk about money. But no, she needs money.
She needs money. We'll talk about that. Hell yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You can't eat without money. That's a fact.
And I'm thinking of Maya Rudolph.
I love Maya Rudolph. We could talk about her.
We love Maya Rudolph.
Yeah.
No, tennis player.
Which one? Althea Gibson?
Wilma Rudolph, who's like, this is nice and everything, but I need some money. Mm-hmm. Wilma Rudolph's like, that's my kind of girl. She's like, listen.
She's correct.
Wimbledon is great, but where my check? Okay.
Yep. Yep. You can write it out to cash. It's good. Yeah. I will accept.
Great.
Okay. So she became age eligible for senior international competitions in 2015. So she recovers from her toe injury. She made her senior international debut at the, let me see if I can say this word. Ljubljana. You know what? I shouldn't have even tried it. It's a World Cup and it's at a place.
Okay. World Cup at a place. Okay, got it.
Uh-huh. And she won the bronze medal on the uneven bars. She went to Sao Paulo World Cup and won the silver medal on the vault. Now, there's more that she did that year. She did a whole lot with a whole lots of medals, and she's doing great. Highly successful. Google it. It's great. Okay. In June 2015, she tore her ACL for the first time. Now, this led her to miss her most important competition of the season, which is the Pan American Games and the World Championships. So two of the most important competitions. So she healed up in time to play a pivotal role in helping Brazil secure an Olympic qualification in 2016. So what happens is they have to compete to qualify for the country to qualify to compete. So it's called the Olympic Test Event. Like, I didn't know this and I'm obsessed. Yeah. And so they won the gold medal in the team event and qualified a full team to the 2016 Summer Olympics. So individually, she qualified for the uneven bars final and she ran the bronze. Cool. So later that year, she competed at the Sao Paulo World Cup, and did well. So she eventually finds out she does another competition where that she was officially named to the Brazilian Olympic team. So she helps them get in, does a whole bunch of other competitions, wins a whole bunch of other medals, and then competes again in order to be placed on the team. But she gets placed. Okay.
Okay. Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah. It's like not fair, I think. There's a lot of like...
Yeah, you should have to only compete once to get...
No, like 75 times. Okay, 75 to 20,000 times. Okay. All right, so at the 2016 Olympics, She helped Brazil qualify for the team finals in fifth place. She qualified individually because so the way the gymnastics works is like you compete as a team to see if you can compete at the end as a team to place, right? And then you compete to see which two gymnasts from your country get to compete as an individual for the individual all around. Did that make any sense?
Okay. Yeah.
If you watch a lot of Olympics, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
You have to compete to get the team in.
Right. And then if you want to be an individual, then you have to compete and it's harder. So anyway,
like in acting, if you're going for the ensemble for best drama, and then you're also going for best actor or actress.
Girl.
In the thing. Yeah.
Exactly. That's
everything
good.
Goes back to.
Yep. Now I understand.
Drama, baby. But I'm sorry. Go
now
ahead.
Now I understand what I just said. Okay. So they got fifth place that year, but she qualified individually and the all-around final in third place behind Simone Biles and Allie Raisman. So now the team finals, ultimately, she did take a fall and Brazil placed eighth. Now, 2017, she won three World Cup medals, but she also had two different injuries that year. So after winning a silver medal at the City of Jesolo Trophy meet and in both the team and the all-around, then competed at the Copper Challenge Cup, where she won the gold on vault, she suffered an ankle injury during training. Now, she had to wear a protective boot for 2 months. In August, she returned to training and then immediately won gold on the uneven bars and vault at the Varna Challenge Cup. Now, I've injured myself. Okay. More times than I care to admit. I cannot. Do you know, I can't run for a year. Okay. Because it hurts. You know, like what?
Girl, I stubbed my shin.
Mm.
3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, owie, owie, owie. I act like I can't walk. So yeah.
No, I hear
these you. These elite athletes are just
unbelievable.
Yeah.
I was reaching for a can of peas. It's over. You know what I'm saying?
My shoulder's been acting up. I'm like, I think I slept on it. I've been sleeping on it wrong.
That's what happened. I don't think we're winning any gold medals tomorrow. So.
Yeah, we're not breaking our toe or our ankle and then going 3 months with a boot and then winning gold. Silver or bronze. Mm-hmm. We're not doing any of this. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're getting kicked out because we didn't buy a ticket to observe and we can't even do that. Okay. Yeah. So she was initially named to the World Championships team that year, but she suffered a second ACL injury in Montreal and that forced her to withdraw from the competition. In 2018, after returning from her second ACL tear at the Pan American Championships, she competed on two events, the vault and uneven bars. She helped the Brazilian team win the silver medal behind the United States. She's had two ACL tears. Okay. A little less than a year later, she tears it again on the same knee.
Ooh.
Okay. P.S. She had full reconstruction surgery each time. Okay. Now, in 2019, she didn't really compete. She didn't want one competition. And without her, they were unable to qualify for the Olympics as a team. However, when she was ready to come back in 2020, something happened that year. Do you remember? I don't know.
Something. I don't know. All I remember is we were out of toilet paper.
Yeah. Yeah.
People freaking out.
My kids would not leave the house, not ever.
Yeah.
So it's 2020. There's a pandemic. So what happened was Brazil shut down completely. It was, I think, worse than here. It was rough. So in July, her and a bunch of fellow Brazilians gymnasts traveled to Portugal to continue to train. So apparently they had a system wherein you could train somehow safely-ish. Right. Everything was ish.
Yeah, exactly.
And in 2021, she competed in the Pan American Games. And then she did well enough to qualify for the 2020 Olympics because they were happening in 2021. Now, I don't think the team was able to qualify, but she could qualify. And then she won the gold medal on the floor and the silver in the all around in 2021, the 2020 Olympics in 2021. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So this made her the first Olympic champion in Brazilian women's artistic gymnastics history. Okay. So like, I'm really glad I'm talking about her because she's been kicking ass for like a while. This yeah. is when she became famous.
Okay.
She's P.S. been dating a man named Luiz Clayton, I can't say it, since June 2022. And he's a bodybuilder. Girl, get it. Yes.
Of course.
Damn straight. Now, she succeeded in 2022 in all of the gymnastics things. She was very good. It was very exciting. Brazil beat the U.S. in the Pan American Championships that year. They haven't done that since 1997. And she says, ooh, quote, "This is not only for me, but for the whole of Brazil. I want to inspire younger kids with my achievements. It's not just the medals. I made everybody proud of me."
Aww.
Okay. So at the World Championships in Liverpool, she became the first South American gymnast to win a world all-around title. In 2023, okay, so many successes. We're going to skip 2023. 2024! Am I yelling? I think I'm yelling. In Paris.
You're just excited.
I'm so excited. Like, essentially yesterday, Rebecca and the Brazilian national team, they won the bronze medal at the team all-around final. The first ever for the country. Okay. She was amazing to watch, you guys. She was amazing. Before I knew she was a thing, we kept, like, looking for her, you know? Okay, she won the silver medal for the individual all-around, which means, okay, Simone Biles won the gold because she's Simone Biles. This is fair enough. And Jordan Chiles won the bronze. I think so. Oh, my God, am I messing that up? I think that's what happened for the all-around. No, okay. I'm lying to you. It wasn't Jordan. It was Suni, who I
okay.
also love.
Okay.
Who I yes. also love. Who I also, okay, Miriam, calm down. Okay, so for the famously, and we've posted this on our Instagram already, for the floor exercise. So she won some golds and some silvers in the 2020 Olympics. But remember that year, Simone ended up dropping out. So there was some like, well, she won, but Simone wasn't there. But this yeah. year, Simone was there.
Simone is there. Yeah.
And I love that Simone is like, this girl scares me.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
love
that's
that.
What I'm saying that.
And then on the podium for the floor event, right? It's Rebecca as gold. It's Simone as silver. And it's Jordan Chiles as the bronze. And that's an all black podium. And y'all have seen it, but I'm obsessed of Jordan whispering to Simone, should we bow to her? And Simone being like, yeah, let's do it. And they do it. And it's the most beautiful picture in all of like aww. Olympics ever. I just feel like
I love it.
I love women's gymnastics and women's gymnastics has been through hell. It really has.
Yeah.
The history of it. It's there's so much history of abuse of yep. children, right? There's a million documentaries, you guys. Go watch them.
I also think it's interesting that all these children of Africa, ultimately,
yeah,
their ancestors came to this part of the world forcibly, and then they and those the offsprings of those enslaved people get to go to the Olympics in Paris and show each other so much love. I just think it's just so beautiful and just so wonderful, and like I love it how because really confident women know that, oh, I'm a bad bitch. And like, yes. sometimes I'm gonna be gold, sometimes I'll be silver, sometimes I'll be bronze, but bitch, I'm still a bad bitch. And you can yep. also give other women that space to be bad bitches too. And like, I love that yes. this, because you and I both know that catty thing that women get. It's like, men are way more catty than women.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are some women who play into that, but that has not been my experience as a woman walking in this world. That, you know, that there are a lot of women out there who are also confident, who are also rooting for other women.
Yeah.
And that's just so wonderful. Because these are highly, highly competitive athletes and Olympians, like literal Olympians. And the fact that they have, you know, they all adore, they're all trying their best. They're all trying their best at every competition.
Yep.
And sometimes the cookie crumbles somewhere else. And for them to just be celebrating each other is so beautiful. So I agree. So beautiful.
It's magic. It's like watching magic, especially after what we know.
Yeah.
The gymnastics has been through it. Black women have been through it.
Yep.
And so them having this moment, it's just, it's like icing on a cake. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
So Rebecca has won a total of 6 Olympic medals, 9 world medals, and she is the most decorated Brazilian and Latin American gymnast of all time, as well as the most decorated Brazilian Olympian in any discipline. She is now worth, and maybe this is my favorite part, $1.5 million.
That's right.
That's right.
And bring some more, because she needs to be, I need to see her on, she might not be on Wheaties boxes, because they tend to go to American athletes, but
yeah,
I mean, Nike, Nike,
come on.
Y'all need to step up, like, I don't know, Reebok, whatever, is Reebok still a thing? I don't know.
Lululemon now, is that what we're doing?
This girl needs some money, run her some money,
because
she's a superstar too.
I was like, well, how much money does she make? You know what I mean?
Because $1.5 million is a lot of money, obviously.
It is, but
it's
she's
like,
got 7 brothers and sisters, so
she got a mama to take care of. She got a little brother. She got to give him a little extra. You know, she probably got to pay back the facility. You know, like
right.
I need her to be making at least $20 million a year from endorsement deals. This is what I
need
her
to never want for anything again.
For anything. Or her children or her grandchildren.
Right. So, there you go. There you go.
This is what I need for her.
All right, y'all. Now we know. So, Rebecca, if you're listening, this is what we want for you. Okay.
Yeah. We want you to have all the things, all the money. People wanted to pussyfoot around money. No. Women need money.
Money. Not like, oh, just come on to my show.
No.
And you'll get experience. Money. Yes.
Money. So, especially at all the sacrifices that they make as athletes. That's amazing. Yes. Thank you so much.
Oh my God.
For sharing that, Rebecca's story with us. So, all right, guys, that will wrap it up for the latest episode of Notorious Women Podcast. Remember, what do we say? To follow us on all the things.
All the things.
Also, leave us a 5-star review in the Apple Store. We greatly appreciate it. If you want to send us some money. you can do that for as little as $2 a month, or you can do a one-time donation to the show at our Patreon. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen, and that's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And Miriam, how else can they support the show and find us?
Y'all, we have an Instagram. We have so much fun there. Please join us. It's Notorious Women Podcast. We also have a YouTube where you can listen to episodes there, which is also Notorious Women Podcast. Our Gmail is notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. So if you have long emails, go there. If you want to DM us on Instagram, you can do that too. And that is that.
And thank you. And Miriam,
yes, Lovetta.
You have won gold in my heart.
Thank you, Lovetta.
In gymnastics, because I want that for you.
I appreciate it.
You totally could have been a gymnast. Like,
I was like that little spitfire, but also scared of heights, so it didn't really work out. But
I don't think I'm scared of heights. And then I'm like, at some place really, really tall, and I'm like, maybe I am scared of heights. I don't know. Like,
yeah. I was like a floor. If the gymnastics were just the floor, I'd have been a star.
Yeah, hey, you could
have. But there isn't.
You're an Olympian in my heart, my
friend.
I appreciate it. And so are you, listeners. Guys, we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.